Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Harbin and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. And James, we have a bit of breaking news this morning, which is that Boris Johnson has written to Nicola Sturgeon saying no to her demands for a second Scottish independence referendum.
Yes, it's not the longest of letters. It basically says you and Alex Salmond promised that this would be a once in a generation vote and therefore the UK government will not give you the powers to hold a second independence referendum. Obviously, the SNP will object to it. The people will say this is disrespecting the results of a general election in Scotland. I think this line just about can hold on the grounds that the SNP itself suggested its campaign in the general election wasn't just about independence. And that final week, there was that pivot towards saying, look, if you just want to stop Brexit, vote SNP. This will be a much more difficult position to maintain if at the 2021 Holyrood elections, the SNP and the Greens combined win a majority, because then it will be able to say, look, we ran on a platform of having a second independence referendum and we won a majority in the Scottish Parliament. And it wasn't about Brexit or other issues. So, but I think it will do for now. But I think that the real challenge for the Tories, who are having their own leadership contest in Scotland right now, is to find a way for them and the other unionist parties to stop the SNP from getting that majority in the 2021 Holyrood elections.
And Katie, you recently wrote about how one of the downsides of the recent election result is that the Tories do have less authority in Scotland as a result of doing much worse than they'd expected. Does that not mean that Nicola Sturgeon can basically craft a response saying you're ignoring a part of the country that's actually rejected you?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a full rejection. If you look at the election result, the Scottish Conservatives are the second largest party in Scotland, but it's clear that the SNP are ahead by quite a margin. I think that ultimately Nicola Sturgeon is currently in her ideal situation. She can say that she wants a second independence referendum, knowing that Boris Johnson is going to refuse her. And at that point, the line you've heard a lot, which is the Tory rule and, you know, the people of England ignoring the wishes of Scotland. I think were Boris Johnson to look like he might be about to grant it, you might see some SNP saying, is this the right time to go? If you look at independence polls and public opinion, and which you are getting that lovely background noise, it is again a,
it's just me pouring the coffee.
Coffee house, coffee house soundtrack.
Polls
we are actually in a coffee house.
Very serious discussion. But polls do suggest that actually at the moment it's the union vote that's higher. So I think that being able to call for it knowing the Tories will say no is a fairly safe thing for the SNP to do. Now, clearly they passionately do want an independence referendum, but I think the specific timing is a different issue because, yes, we have had once in a century before, but I think were you to have a second and say that didn't work out as the SNP called, I do think it's harder to call for a third one. I'm not saying it won't happen. There would clearly be people doing it, but therefore you want to get the timing right on this. I think that it is a tricky position the Tories find themselves in. Because Boris Johnson is saying no, I think the SNP can make hay with this. But that said, if you were to say yes, it's also very difficult. And it does all relate back, I think, to the Scottish Parliament election, because there are senior Scottish Tories who have said on the record, David Mundell, the former Scottish Secretary, has, Alistair Jack, the current Scottish Secretary, did so during the election campaign. They tried to move past it quite quickly. But he did say, if there is a majority in the Scottish Parliament election for pro-independence parties, I think he said it had to be just the SNP. Mundell said it could be the Greens and the SNP in terms of that majority. It's harder for Westminster to ignore. So I think that even if Boris Johnson was insistent you're still not going to get a second independence referendum, that's when cracks would start to appear in Tory unity on the issue.
James, in between your sips of your newly poured coffee, can you tell us a little bit about the Scottish Tory leadership contest and who the contenders are? Because they were, a year ago, they had Ruth Davidson, they were high profile as a party, and now a lot of people are complaining they haven't even heard of most of the contenders.
Well, I mean, Michelle Bannerman, who's the underdog contender, I think, you know, is fairly unknown even in Scottish Tory circles. You know, this is very much
which are quite small.
A new candidate on the scene. Jackson Carlisle, who's been the acting leader while since Ruth Davidson stepped down, kind of led the Tories through the election in Scotland. He is running as well. He's got most of a kind of Tory Holyrood establishment, I should say, behind him. But I think there is a question, which is, you know, the Scottish Tories were so based in the, how they presented themselves to the public as kind of, you know, as the political wing of Ruth Davidson, if you see what I mean. But it is quite hard for them to do this. Now there are structural forces that work in their favour, which is, you know, if you trust most, if you look at the polling, and most of the polling indicates that the majority of Scots do not want to leave the UK, and the majority of Scots do not want the second independence referendum anytime soon. The constitutional question gives the Tories a kind of certain default vote. I think what you saw at the last election was that Brexit and the absence of Ruth Davidson have made it harder for the Scottish Tories to reach into other bits of that unionist vote. I think they had some success with Labour unionists. You know, the Scottish Labour have got a terrible problem in that they don't have a position on the constitution when Scottish politics is so much about the constitution these days. But I think their problem was in kind of pushing down that kind of Lib Dem, Remain-y vote. You know, that was where they had difficulties. No coincidence that Paul Masterson, one of the most pro-Remain constituencies in the UK, lost his seat in 2019. So I think the kind of challenge for the Scottish Tories is, you know, that at 2021, how do they find a way to block that SNP majority? And I suspect that, you know, they are relying on events that everyone in Scottish politics is waiting on, which we might not be able to refer to as much as anything else.
Moving on, Boris Johnson gave an interview this morning to BBC Breakfast, his first major interview since the election. And Katie, the headline seems to be that he wants Big Ben to bong for Brexit and the public to raise the money to do it.
Yes, and there's also the fact that he said being vegan was a crime against cheese lovers or something like that.
And it required a lot of concentration.
So I'm not sure if it's necessarily the hard-hitting lines some were expecting from his first interview. On, I think, the first thing, the issue of Big Ben, if we want to go to the important stuff first, Boris Johnson's point was lots of people, particularly Marc Francois, I think, has been leading the Parliament campaign for this, want the bongs of Big Ben to chime. I'm worried I'm getting my clock times wrong here. When the UK leaves the EU at the end of the month. Now, Boris Johnson's point is that he was up for the idea in theory, but it costs around £500,000 to do. And so they are looking at ways to pursue that. So potentially you're going to start to see a crowdfunder campaign. I think elsewhere, if you look at other things that were discussed during the interview, I mean, Boris Johnson appeared to suggest that you could replace the Iran nuclear deal with a Trump deal. Now, this is something that's been mooted in the past, but Number 10 have been quite quick to try and clarify since that it wasn't a rejection of the UK support for the Iran nuclear deal. I think ultimately, clearly, from the UK perspective, if there is a nuclear deal that you can do with Iran, which has America's support after Donald Trump withdrew from it, that is better than the current one. But I don't think there's any suggestion that the UK would pull out of this one with nothing to replace it with. Elsewhere, I think on Brexit, we perhaps got the small sign of a climb down, but I could be overreading it, when talking about what date by which the trade deal would be done. And during the election campaign, Boris Johnson promised that, you know, never under any circumstances would this go past when the transition period ends. He was very against the idea again in this interview, but he said he chose slightly different language and just it was very, very, very unlikely, and said that he almost left himself a very small caveat, which was pointing out that the reason he wasn't being 100%, it seemed, was because he's saying, you know, sometimes when things don't go as you want them, people are difficult. So I think that does give a hint that this could go on, and perhaps we will see a little bit of what we saw over the past couple of months, which is Number 10 being very vigorous for a deadline, but slowly finding ways to blame other people if they do miss it.
James, he has got away with this sort of thing in the past. I mean, Brexit Day is in January, when he promised that he'd rather die in a ditch than it go beyond October of last year. So it's not going to be the greatest blow to someone who's just won a huge majority if this deadline slips again for the trade talks.
I think if he has to extend the transition, it is a massive blow, because in the last parliament, he was what he could very legitimately say was that other people had forced him into this. He did not have a majority in that parliament. That parliament had acted in defiance of his will. He had even gone so far as to prorogue parliament in an attempt to stop them from doing this, something that an action that the Supreme Court found to be unlawful. And so he basically could say that it was lots of other people's fault. That one of the natures of the election result is the buck stops with him. Now, I think it's important to distinguish between two things here. You could well get to a situation where in December 2020 there isn't a trade deal agreed by the UK and the EU, but the UK and the EU agreed to some kind of continuity arrangement to keep everything going. Now, as long as that did not involve formally extending the transition and therefore free movement and the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice, then I think Boris Johnson could sell that, you know, because we would have left the EU in an inarguable way. He could say, look, we've left the EU, there's no more free movement, there's no more ECJ jurisdiction, we're just carrying on talking, trying to get this trade deal, and we're keeping things as they are as we talk. I think if he has to extend the formal transition, which would involve, you know, free movement carrying on, more money being sent from the UK to Brussels to pay for that extra extension to the transition. You know, that is, I think, a completely different political kettle of fish.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie.